Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Connection Radio. I do have Mark Rawson on with you this evening, and we have my co-host, Pamela Littor. Pamela, are you there?
I'm here. Nice to see you.
All right. Excellent. It's great to have you on tonight. Pam, I'll let you go ahead and... Welcome to Spiritual Connection Radio. I do have Mark Rawson on with you this evening, and we have my co-host, Pamela Littor. Pamela, are you there?
I'm here. Nice to see you.
All right. Excellent. It's great to have you on tonight. Pam, I'll let you go ahead and introduce our special guests this evening. So go ahead.
Okay. Tonight we have the honor of having on our show Ariel and Shia Kane. I would like to start by asking the two of you to say hello.
Hi,
hello.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Shia.
Nice to have you both with us tonight. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, when, how you got started in this?
Well, let's see.
Exactly.
We've been together a bit more than 30 years.
And married for 28, and we've been leading seminars together for 25. And
going on 26 years, I guess.
Yeah.
When we met, we were both striving to be the best us we could possibly be. We took whatever courses there were. I mean, I took my first course in 1972. So that was a while ago. As a participant, I took my first transformational workshop back then, but prior to that, I had been seeking enlightenment for many years, and eventually we found it.
Yeah, for me...
Well, that's
quite a statement.
Yeah, it is. And I can actually say it's true. For me, I always look for possibilities. I started out more from a acting perspective. When I met Shia, I was working or aspiring to work as an actress. I actually ended up, after we got together, getting quite a bit of work and working for a number of years.
In New York City.
In New York City. On television and stage, but we went off on a world tour to see what else is possible. We lived in a meditation center for a couple of years, and we found that we came back disillusioned. And what I mean by that was we realized that
the illusion
was something else was going to fix us. And Shia had an epiphany where he realized he could only be exactly as he was. And in that moment, it was the most amazing thing. He just stopped picking on himself in his thoughts. And he also, by extension, since we're in relationship, he stopped picking on me.
We were actually married at that time.
Well, absolutely.
Yes, we were very married at that time.
But we were normal married.
Yeah,
you know,
normal
the bicker
married.
Thing.
Yeah, we were normal people then. We fought over silly things.
Yeah, very silly.
And we got upset over things.
And we thought it was each other's fault,
like most people do.
But I have to tell you, my experience with myself, when Shia stopped picking on himself in his head and stopped working on me in his thoughts, was dramatic and profound, and I became smarter and easier, and things were...
Instantaneously.
Yep, it was just very wonderful.
We finish each other's sentences.
Did you notice?
So, you know, if you're listening, don't offend yourself unless you do, and then God bless you.
Can't help it, though. It's our style.
Right. We work together. We live together. We're together 24/7.
And we have a lot of fun with it.
Yes.
That's so wonderful. It sounds like both of you have a lot of fun with life.
Well, what else is life for but to have fun?
I like it.
Is it to seriously get ahead?
Well, if you're not having fun, you're resisting something. And
or you're striving for something that takes you out of the current moment of your life.
Exactly. If it's not joy, it's an illusion. Buddha said that.
Excellent.
Buddha said that?
Okay.
Buddha.
Good for him. Her. Whatever.
Listen,
that's great.
I have a question about picking on yourself, because that's sort of how you started, Ariel, with saying that Shia, when he stopped picking on himself in his own head, he stopped picking on you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so profound, because I think we tend to notice the imperfections of life, not only in our spouse, in ourselves, in the restaurant we go into, and so many of us, we walk into a space, and the first thing we do is start looking at the imperfections. How would you advise our audience as to begin to let that go?
By being kind to yourself.
I was going to say be gentle with yourself. See, the thing is this. Our approach is not psychotherapeutic, so we don't try to change or fix people. Our approach is anthropological. And an anthropologist is somebody who studies cultures and how they function non-judgmentally.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have picky thoughts, if you go into a restaurant and pick things apart, that's just a product of the cultural stream you've been dipped into. And if you bring awareness to it, if you begin to notice how it's put together, not why, not where it came from.
And our definition of awareness is a non-judgmental seeing of how something works or is. And see, there are three very simple ideas that we have. The first one is anything that you resist, like your judgmental nature, will persist, it'll grow stronger, and it'll dominate your life.
And most people judge their judgmental nature. They think they shouldn't have it.
We've been raised with the idea that being judgmental is wrong.
Second idea is you can only be exactly as you are.
In any given moment of now, you can only be exactly as you are. And that includes having judgmental thoughts when you do.
So if you were to take a camera, take a snapshot of you, in this instant you can only be exactly where you are, how you are, with all your life circumstances. Can't be any different because it's already gone by. And then there's another moment. Now, the third principle or the third idea is that anything you see without judging
completes itself.
And it loses its power over you.
Right. It kind of goes like this. Life shows up the way it does, and then you have a choice. You can either say no to how your life is showing up, in which case whatever you're saying no to sticks around, because anything you resist or say no to, you get stuck to.
Mm-hmm.
It persists and it grows stronger. Or you could be a yes to how your life is showing up, in which case you don't disagree with it, you are with it, and it completes itself. So your life keeps being this completion, an ongoing completion of your karma until your karma is cleaned up. And then your life becomes a creation rather than a repeat of past traumatic experiences,
so,
or non-experiences.
To go back to your question, to be kind to
mm-hmm.
yourself with what you see, if you see yourself being picky, you don't take it personal because it's just something that's been initiated. And awareness is this wonderful tool where you get interested in what is rather than living through your preferences. People who prefer to have a quiet mind tend to be very noisy inside.
That's very interesting.
That's it. So can I sort of rephrase a portion of what you just said in my own words in terms of the three things that you were talking about? Releasing resistance. In other words, not saying no to life, observing things exactly as it is, because in that moment, that's exactly how you are, and life completes itself if you don't resist it. Isn't that, all three of those issues, a level of seeing life as already perfect? What do you think about that?
Life is already perfect. But it disagrees with our thoughts, and most of us, if not all of us, believe that we are our thoughts.
You know, one of the things, though, there's a difference between change and transformation. And when you gave us back our words, at least some of it was translated into change. And if you don't catch it, that change aspect of it will eventually put a pressure on you to be different. So when you gave us back the first one, and it was releasing negativity or releasing resistance, you gave it a do, something to do, release the resistance. And we're not saying release the resistance. What we're saying is if you resist something, this
it'll
will
persist.
Happen. And but it's not telling you not to resist it.
But what's really interesting, Pam, about your question is that you don't just hear what we're saying, you translate it through what you know and how you view life, which is based on the culture you grew up in, whether you agreed with that culture or not.
And the things you added on by learning, by extension later.
But the culture each of us is raised in dictates how we see life.
Exactly.
Like it, don't like it, there's nothing about we can do about that. It's as though we're looking through life, at life through a filter or a template, like we're colorblind to everything we don't already know.
That's I believe that's completely true. And, you know, there's been little tidbits in the culture that said that things like the Indians, when they saw Christopher Columbus's ship, didn't see the ship because, even though it was right there, because they had never seen a ship before and didn't have anything to equate it to. So
exactly. That's
mm-hmm.
exactly accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
So, So the question I have for you, because I have been following your work for quite a while, but I'd like to introduce the audience to it. Can you tell us the different series that you've created? I want to say that Working on Yourself Does Not Work is probably one of the first ones. If you could kind of just take us through it and then bring us to, you know, the new book that's coming out and, you know, what's going on with that.
Well, our first book is called Working on Yourself Doesn't Work, the three simple ideas that will instantaneously transform your life. And that really happened because we saw, after all of our striving, that working on ourselves didn't work, but being here did. And then we moved on to...
Well, you know, we talked earlier a bit about enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And we live our lives as enlightened beings, Ariel and I, not as a doing, but as a being. And what I mean by that is we don't do being enlightened. We live our lives, if I were to define enlightenment, it would be directly, rather than thinking about everything we do to see whether it's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, we just live our lives rather than listen to the internal governor that complains most of the time that we should do it differently, we should have done it differently, we should do it better. That's gone. That's been gone for a quarter of a century in our relationship. So first, there's enlightenment on the level of individual. And so that's what Working on Yourself was written about, or doesn't work. The second book that we wrote was called How to Have a Magical Relationship, because...
How to Create a Magical Relationship.
We wrote so many things.
That's because Hav is in the next
okay.
one.
Okay, right. So How to Create a Magical Relationship, which, by the way, won the Nautilus Book Award for the best relationships book in 2007.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And that, so we applied the principles of transformation as we see them, and which is interesting because we were both born in the Western culture. I was born in New York. Ariel was born in Oregon, and so we have this Western culture, Western mind, and yet we've achieved a state of well-being that we never thought could be possible. So when you achieve it on the level of individual, then there's a possibility of relationship. And so we apply the principles of instantaneous transformation to relationship, and that was the second book.
The
third book was?
A lot of people told us that one of the things they've really enjoyed in our books is that our style of teaching is generally by telling about how we live rather than telling you how to live. And we have a number of stories and anecdotes. And the next book was called Being Here, Modern Day Tales of Enlightenment. And they're just a series of stories on all different subjects, like upsets and on
passion
and your intuition and being here. And so that was the third book. And the most recent book that just came out in September and has just won the Mom's Choice Book Award Gold Medal for the Best Relationship and Marriage Book of 2012. It's called How to Have a Match Made in Heaven, A Transformational Approach to Dating, Relating, and Marriage.
Congratulations. That's incredible.
Yeah, we're very pleased with that.
What's really unique about this book is we have an online
subscription
series where people get in their inbox each week a video of us working with either a person or a couple. And, either individuals or couples. And we occasionally watch them, and we were watching one that we had done a couple of years ago, and we were so taken by how this person, this woman, had such an archetypical relationship with her father that caused that influenced how she related in all relationships of her life, that after watching it, Ariel and I said, we've got to turn this into a book. So this book contains the videos that the individual chapters are based on. So
it's a standalone book, but we also give the
URL
links so that people can go up on the website and actually see that people transform, which is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
How wonderful.
This is probably a good time. Why don't you go ahead and mention your website so that people know how to go and find your work?
It's easy. It's transformationmadeeasy.com. Yeah, and from there they can find our book as well, because there's a link right on the homepage. There is a book one, matchmadeinheavenbook.com, but transformationmadeeasy.com is probably the easiest way to get all the way around our work.
And you know, what's interesting is we relate, you know, not we, the Ariel and I, but the general we, human beings, relate what we hear to what we already know as though that's all there is. And if you look in the dictionary under for the definition of transformation, it says change. And if you look under the word change, one of the synonyms is transformation. So there's really basically no difference between change and transformation. Transformation is a form of change, according to Webster. But according to Ariel and Shia Kane, there's a huge difference between transformation and change. And the biggest part of it is that change takes place over time. Change is linear. It happens incrementally.
It includes effort. It also includes the dichotomies of good and bad and right and wrong. And it's logical and it's
reasonable.
Effortful.
Right. All that. And transformation, on the other hand, is a shifting that takes place outside of time. So it happens in an instant, and it affects everything. So it's not linear. It's not goal-oriented. It's happening in all aspects of one's life in an instant that happens, and then your life unfolds, kind of like you drop a pebble into a pool. The ripples go out 360 degrees. And that's what we've discovered. And life becomes an adventure. It becomes three-dimensional. It becomes a joyous experience of unfolding rather than an effortful striving to achieve what we think will make us happy.
I like that.
How would you recommend to a young couple just starting off how to transform their relationship into something? Obviously, the two of you have something wonderfully special. You not only complete each other's sentences, but it seems as though you feed each other with energy. That, from my perspective, is an end result of this transformation. How would you explain to our audience how to begin that process?
One thing. First off, I want to just acknowledge you, Pam, for seeing that.
That feeding.
That phenomena, yes.
Yeah, I think sometimes we underestimate it. We recently did a video. We were on a video program. They wanted to interview us separately, and we realized while we were both quite articulate and fine separately, there is a power feeding that absolutely happens between the two of us that makes the two of us together. It's
much
like greater than the sum
two
of its
right,
parts.
Right.
And I'll tell you something, there's this skill set, and you can practice it everywhere, and it is the best with your partner, and that is true listening. Listening, if I listen to hear what Shai has to say from his perspective, not to see if I agree with it, not to see whether or not how it's going to affect agenda of mine, not to hold on to what my point is, but to just actually fully be here, use my eyes, listen to what he has to say, And it has a profound effect.
But we haven't been trained. You see, I said earlier that our approach is anthropological. And we've been, in the first 6 years of an infant's life, the mind is in a theta brainwave state, which means we absorb information like a download. It's not filtered through any cognitive process like, is this the truth, what I'm hearing or seeing or learning? It's just taken in as though true. And so it's out of that that we base our way of relating to life on. Now, we were not raised, any of us, by parents who actually knew there was this possibility called true listening.
People are just busy trying to survive having kids.
Trying to survive.
Kids are incredible stressors.
You know, trying to survive, putting food on the table, trying to, and they learned how to be the way they were from previous generations.
Right.
So there's nobody at fault here. You see, there's nobody did it wrong. Everybody did it perfectly if you arrive.
You know, the challenge, we're all speaking about 200 words a minute, but you can process almost 3,000 words a minute. You can process a lot of words. So anytime you're having a conversation with somebody and they're speaking at normal speed, you can go off and practically write a book between words.
But if you train yourself to stay present and listen, a couple of things happen. One, the other person feels empowered. They feel heard. They feel seen and known. And the other thing, which is the most remarkable thing of all, is it pulls you, the listener, into the current moment of now, and that's all it takes to have your life transformed.
When you're in the moment, you're the most brilliant you. You are so brilliant. Most of us underestimate ourselves, but that's where your brilliance arrives.
But, well, part of why most of us underestimate ourselves is because we listen to our self-deprecating thoughts.
Right, we're busy thinking. All your limitations live in your thoughts.
Great.
So really, 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 and it's not just new couples. People have been together for a while and it starts to go stale. They think they know who they're sitting in the room with. They've stopped listening. They've gotten busy.
Right. They don't. See, look. Each day, in so many ways, I rediscover my love for Ariel. It's not a do.
Oh, how wonderful.
That I'm there to see her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not off in my thoughts about what would be better than what I have. See, most of us have been trained in this, something better is going to come along that's going to save us. You know, someday the prince will come. Not. It's a toad.
Until
you kiss him.
You're wearing green.
I know.
You're the most handsome toad I know.
Well, thank you.
Well, that's wonderful. Let me ask you a question about a spouse, for example. Say if there's someone listening to this show who has a spouse that is really not on the same wavelength. And how do you deal with that?
Well, here's the thing. A lot of people aren't on the same wavelength because they don't listen to each other. So when Ariel and I talked about listening, listening is key. But, you know, if you were on the same wavelength at one point, there have been transgressions or things said or done that haven't been kind. And those things drive people off onto a different wavelength.
The other thing is I think people often perceive they're on a separate wavelength because they're keeping a list of those transgressions.
Grievances.
So if that were the case, I wouldn't be here listening to Shia. I'd be waiting for him to step into some kind of mental trap I've set up so I could go, see? I knew he's like that. You know, so then you're not actually being with them. You're investing in being right that they're wrong for something from the past.
I see.
And if you're not on the same wavelength with your spouse, I wouldn't look at your spouse. I'd look at you.
Well, here's the thing. That's what it came and went.
Oh, I like
came
that.
Back.
I like
see,
that.
people blame how they feel on the circumstances as though somebody else disturbs them or something somebody does disturbs them. We, human beings, are very complex creatures that have all kinds of unexperienced emotion locked up in us that when given the right set of circumstances, we release it and blame it on the circumstance rather than it's all us. So if you don't feel good, it isn't because your boyfriend or girlfriend. It's because you don't feel good. And you look around, you blame it on something, or you might even blame it on yourself or your upbringing or your parents for how they related or that they got a divorce or that they didn't get a divorce. You can blame it on anything.
Yeah, I actually saw that very same, that dynamic happened this past week. When you talk about how you blame somebody, we went to the dentist this week and got teeth cleaning. And our dentist is a very funny guy. He's very gregarious, and he tends to speak, I don't know quite how to qualify, but I used to take how he related personally, and I disturbed myself with how he spoke to me. I often get my dental work done without Novocaine because I find the Novocaine gives me more difficulties than not. So we've done crowns and things like that. And one time I was there and he had me, I don't know, you know, when you get a filling, they have you bite down to see if your bite is good. And I bit down and he said, "How is that?" I said, "It feels like it's a little high on the outside." And he said, "Oh, I hate you. I knew you were going to say that." And I found that so offensive that he told me he hated me, even in a joking manner. And I had an issue with him in my mind. I took it away, and I had it for a while. He probably didn't even remember he had me as a patient, so it was pretty funny. I went back in there, and he had the same kind of sense of humor about things, the same clipped manner, the same, and it didn't ruffle anything in me. And I just was seeing yet again with a sense of humor that...
But if you're upset, anything gets you upset. And if you're not upset, difficult to get you upset when you're not upset.
And I realized that I could allow myself to really like this guy and not have to hold a vendetta against him and not have to be barricaded, afraid he was going to say something insensitive again.
And he's actually quite a good dental technician.
He is. And I could just get over it. And it was really, I had fun.
It's
up to me to create intimacy.
Mark, do you want to take a short break to talk about...
Yeah, thank you. Sure, thank you. So everybody, you're listening to Spiritual Connection Radio. If you want to find out more about our radio show, you can go to www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And we have Ariel and Chaya Kane on with us this evening, along with my co-host Pamela Latour. If you guys could just introduce your website again, I'd like to get those links out to everybody so that they can find your material.
Well, our website is transformationmadeeasy.com.
Love it. So, so thank you for the break, Pam, there. It's great because we get going on a roll here, and it's like I don't even want to stop and even take a break.
Well, you know, there's one thing Ariel said a little while ago about relationships getting stale, and she just mentioned it briefly, but I'd like to go back to that if we could.
Yeah.
Sure. People forget to date.
Yes, that's a very good comment. The one that I was going to ask you, let's get to that after. The first question I had was, you know, you take pictures, your brain takes pictures of your living room. You walk into the same room 100, 200, 300 times, and your brain stops looking around. You think you know what the living room looks like. And this isn't it also true for your spouse's face, for the way they are? You really stop looking?
Most people stop looking.
doesn't that make it stale? How do you change that?
Get present everywhere you are.
See, if you're being where you are, nothing's stale. Everything's new. Everything's unique. The moment is always different from one moment to the next. There's never a same moment.
And when I say people, you know, about dating, Shai and I date everywhere we go, not just each other. I mean, he went to ShopRite earlier today. I guarantee you that he struck up a conversation with whoever was checking out his items. If he was in the produce, maybe with the produce person. We engage everywhere we are and actually see the people who are there.
We engage as if where we are is where we're supposed to be. Like there's no other place on the planet we'd rather be.
I mean, obviously, we are being appropriate in our expression of intimacy with the checkout clerk, but I'm still at the same time not holding back a piece of me for that special moment when I get home and I have the real date. They're all real dates, and if you practice dating everywhere you go, then when you turn your attention, it's a little bit like having a miner's light on your head. You know, or you know those little, they have them now, where you have little headlamps that you can put on. And
with a strap?
It's like
miner's light.
It's like everywhere you look, it's illuminated. When your attention isn't on you and how you're doing, but out into your world, everywhere you look is illuminated.
And everything's new and different and brilliant. You know, it snowed here today or last night, and The snow was falling off the trees today, and it was randomly falling off the trees.
Big blocks.
You know, it was
awesome.
So awesome to watch. And each time it was different, you know. It was like, wow. See, life for a child, small children, is full of discovery and awe and adventure and unfolding. And as we get older, Our priorities, our goals, our preferences get in the way of how life is showing up. Life shows up the way it does, but we think we should be somewhere else, in a better paying job, in a better relationship, in a better something, or a different something, or more of something.
And we've also been trained by hormonal teenagers what's cool. And then, you know, cause we look up to them when we're kids. And then,
that's right.
And then you forget you ever decided to be cool, and then cool runs your life and you stop being there.
And you wouldn't ask a 16-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 12-year-old about relationship, not if you're smart.
Right. That's
because
true.
They don't have a clue. But when we were 6 or 8, we looked up, or 10, we looked up to these
children.
Bigger as
children.
Experts. In relationship.
Yeah. Chris, Shai, I'd like to ask you a question about what you said earlier. When you said when children are born, they operate on the theta brainwave state, excuse me. And in this state, it's not filtered. It just goes in.
It's like a hypnotic trance.
And now tell me how that relates to your concept of being in the moment or being enlightened. I'm sure they have a relationship, but I want to hear from you what you think that is.
Well, I don't think about it so much as how it relates to being in the moment or being enlightened. I see it more as the dictate that rules how you interact with your life, because it's the cultural imprint that from that point forward you operate through. It's like a computer has information programmed into it, and then it has a system with applications that manipulate that information. Well, your first 6 years of life are your download of your system that you're going to interact with life through, and that becomes the filter to see what's possible for you. And so if you've never seen a couple that feed each other power, that are dedicated to each other's well-being, that actually listen to each other when they talk, then that possibility doesn't exist.
And, in fact, a lot of people won't even notice it because it's like...
So far outside their reality.
Yeah, it's like what you were saying about Columbus and the ships. If it's so outside your reality, it doesn't even exist.
Exactly. So how it relates is, you know, people talk about getting outside the box. Well, you can't get outside the box.
We suggest get in the box. I mean, everybody's trying to get away from their box, and they think they got the wrong box. No, you've got the perfect box. So if you get interested in what your box contains, that contents doesn't own you.
As long as you don't make it wrong. All right. See, if you don't judge it and just see it, that's enough for it to lose its power over or its dictatorial attitude over your life.
I mean, you didn't choose to speak English. You absorbed it.
That's true.
And so, same with the attitudes unexamined about
prejudices have been passed on generation to generation. And it isn't always in a spoken word. It can be in a look. It can be in an emotion.
It can be in an eye roll.
That's right. If your parent, when your infants are incredibly sensitive. You know, we do these winter workshops in Costa Rica that are a week long or 2 weeks long. And we had a couple with us there last year who brought their infant son, who was, about 3 months old at the time?
Mm-hmm.
And he never cried in the classroom at all during this, except the day before we took people on a canopy tour, where the canopy is up in the trees. You go with zip lines
from tree to tree, and a lot of people got really nervous, and then the baby got fussy, and so we said, cut it out, you're making the baby nervous, you know.
And when they when the room calmed down, the kid stopped crying, because children are incredibly sensitive to their environments. They may not be able to express it, but it doesn't mean that they're not. And so they absorb the emotions and feelings of their parents and their siblings and their surroundings. And that's what happens in that first 6 years. And then that becomes the framework for the rest of our lives, unless we bring awareness to how we're living, and then freedom shows up.
Now
I noticed one.
Go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I think one of the questions I had was, what do you do, you know, in relationships and stuff when people are doing like that list keeping?
Stop.
Stop in the name of love. Are we kidding? What do we do, or what do they do?
I was kind of seeing this as one of the major steps in the book, and that is, you know, giving up your list keeping, when to say yes to a request and stuff like that.
Well, I think where we got a little caught with your question mark, I understand it, is that Shai and I do our best not to tell people what to do. We lay out what we've done that works and say, hey, here's a possibility. So in the book, we follow three ladies in particular about this subject. The first one's name is Nisha, and then there's Charlotte, and then there's Caitlin. And with Nisha, she was definitely keeping a list with her boyfriend, and she made her displeasure known by banging pots and pans and thinking about him badly in her head. And she actually could see there was another possibility. She'd pop out of the upset for a minute, but it would grab a hold of her again, kind of like Popeye popping out of the cloud of dust. And that's why we joked around, called it like the Popeye factor, because it was kind of like...
That was the chapter heading in the book, was the Popeye factor.
That the upset kept grabbing her. With Charlotte, it was more like, well, I want him to do his share. They got along well mainly, but there were little places where she wanted him to do his 50% and she should do the other 50%. So if anything went wrong, he needed to take equal blame. And our idea is that you're 100% responsible for the health of the relationship. I'm 100% responsible for the health of my relationship.
Mm-hmm. And I am 100% responsible for the health of Ariel and my relationship with her. Because, you see, if I'm doing things that undermine her sense of well-being or undermine her greatness, so, see, a lot of couples are in competition.
That's a very good point.
Say again, please.
That's a very good point, she said.
Yeah, and so, look, I'm sorry for how women have been treated over the eons of time.
Hmm.
You know, it really is a shame that there has not been equality and there still isn't full equality. But nowadays, a lot of women don't want equality. They want superiority. They want to prove that they're better than. And that is not a formula for a magical relationship.
Especially because guys may look big and tough, but they're gentle, sensitive people.
And
well, true. It's also a question, though, it's not just a feminist issue. There are relationships where the woman happens to be very successful and the man is striving to compete with that as well. It goes both ways, but I do think that probably Shia's example would be the predominant one in this culture.
Yeah, but even if a woman is very successful, there are also ways that, you know, and we talk about this quite a bit in our in how to create a magical relationship. There was a couple who came to us where she was more successful than he, and she used to really play on it. She about how, you know, he was not as successful. She would keep him smaller by poking at that. And so in return, he actually, in this session with us, whipped out a picture of them from 20 years ago when they got married and said, look how skinny she was. Look how fat she's gotten. Can you believe I have to live with that? They were fighting a really gross version, I mean, as in a large version of the archetypical type of fight between men and women, where a woman can get a guy's hot spot by making him think he's not producing, and a guy can get a woman's hot spot by having her feel unattractive. They laid it down in that individual session, and they were in sync for a while. I rather doubt it lasted over time.
Oh, it didn't
time.
Last. It didn't last.
Because it...
Look, you have to, in order to have your life transformed, there's got to be some kind of commitment to having it happen.
And
at
to
least,
personal responsibility.
Yeah, you have to make yourself accident-prone for transformation. If you want to have your life transformed, it's like wanting to catch a bus. You don't go waiting for it in the middle of the woods.
Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, I have a question, you know, because I see all the key points we're talking about in creating the magical relationship. What suggestions do you have for a new couple who are basically, you know, if they are truly listening, and maybe if they're truly listening, maybe this isn't, you know, maybe there wouldn't be a question, but what is the answer to being able to do what I would call maybe, some type of conflict resolution as far as, if two people are not agreeing on something, you know, let's just say one person thinks they should be saving money and another person thinks that they should be spending money, and they can't seem to meet, and there's like that verbal conflict where they can't come together. Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, it's not about the specifics. They're enmeshed in a fight that may or may not be of their own making. See, because we as... there's a gender war that's existent in our country and our world where for thousands of years the men have stuck together and the women have stuck together, if not millions of years. And it's only recently, in the last 100 years or so, that there's been selection to choose your own mate even. So the battle has been foisted upon us the same way the language has been foisted upon us. And it takes the courage to look and give up being right if you want a relationship to work.
So in your scenario, this couple, although we don't do real well with hypotheticals, but what you're talking about is so reasonable
general.
And so general and so possible, people would actually think they're fighting over
whether to spend or not to spend,
rather than they are locked in a fight dynamic. Because if they weren't already in a fight, they'd look and see. At one point, the person whose idea, hey, let's spend, that's really the optimal choice. At another point, the person who's let's not spend, that's really the optimal choice. But if you're fighting, you don't look to see
what's the optimal choice
in that moment.
You're more interested in being right about your point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you pull yourself out at that point?
Could you say that again?
How do you pull yourself out of that righteousness? That, you know, when you're in an emotion, it's almost overpowering. And occasionally you catch yourself awareness-wise. Your awareness will pop up and you'll say, okay, I'm here again. Then,
yes,
but the righteousness takes over. How do you pull yourself out?
Because you're more interested in being right.
Well, there are a few things, there's a couple things that come to mind of how you can pull yourself out. One is this. If I ever catch myself being right, and I say, oh, Shia, I'm sorry, I was just being right. It's
mm-hmm.
really important if I've genuinely said, hey, I'm sorry, that he doesn't go, yeah,
and last week, on Thursday,
if your partner actually cops to something.
That you don't punish them for past transgressions.
Because you can drive them right back into the fight. So that's one thing. If you see it and copping to it, being honest, setting up a climate of honesty between you. The other thing is this game that Shai and I have discovered called starting over. You know, there have been occasions where we're both sure we were right about whatever. And you know when you get right about something, it's usually something really ridiculously silly, but at the time it seems monumental. And there came a time where Shai and I were having a conversation about something. We each thought our perspective was really accurate. And I can't remember which one of us, but we were driving actually in the car, and we looked up and we saw an overpass, and we said, okay, when we go under the overpass, it's over. We start over.
I like that.
It was really important.
It was really difficult not to pick it up on the other side of the underpass. You got to know that because your mind wants to fight.
So we had to find other topics to talk about. We had to divert ourselves with what was happening out the window. But, you know, if you really want to
give it up, you can. If you want to be right, see, there are two, you know, the lights in most of our rooms work on a light switch, a toggle switch that's either on or off. Now,
there are rheostats,
dimmers that you can, you know, gradually change the amount of light. But being right has an opposite. And that or is antagonistic to being alive or experiencing aliveness, well-being, satisfaction, relationship, partnership, full self-expression. All of those things fall into the alive category, and then there's the right category. And you can have either one, but you cannot have both. So if you're going to be right about your righteously right, not correct, but right about your point of view, then the other person is wrong. That will not produce well-being or aliveness or the experience of being loved or loving. But if you're willing to give up being right, the payoff is the experience of being loved.
I love that.
I like that. Yeah, I love that too.
Yeah, and it's really like a toggle switch. if you want to be right, you can be right, but it's going to cost you. There is this downside called the loss of aliveness.
And one of the things a lot of people lose in being right is physical intimacy.
Oh, yeah, because you're not going to let them pleasure you because they'll get pleasure.
Because you have to be mad.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's just totally amazing how quickly an hour goes. And, you know, I want to thank both of you for being on the show with us today. And, you know, as we wrap things up and everything, is there anything you want to say in the last minute or so as far as before we do some, you know, talking about your website and stuff?
Yeah. I'd really say.
Be kind to yourself.
Yep. Really. It starts with you. The more you're kind and gentle to yourself, the easier you are on yourself. The more you give yourself a break, the more likely you are to have a match made in heaven, because a match made in heaven starts with you.
And having fun is not a bad idea either.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the book out right now?
Yeah, it is out. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore.
Oh, that's great. And just tell everybody the name of the book again.
How to Have a Match Made in Heaven.
A Transformational Approach to Dating, Relating, and Marriage.
I love that. I do love the way you guys work together.
He loves how we work together.
Oh, well, thank you. So do we.
Yeah. So can you give us your website again?
Yeah, there's two. There's transformationmadeeasy.com and matchmadeinheavenbook.com. Matchmadeinheavenbook.com. You'll see a video of us there.
Yeah.
And what we look like and
how we
work
interact.
Together.
Because we don't hype it up for a camera. We're just ourselves. And I kind of like it because I'm going to be turning 72 in February, and Ariel's moving on towards 55, and we still have a very vital and passionate life together.
Wow, that's beautiful. Pam, did you have any questions in closing? I know we're just wrapping up now.
Well, the only thing I was going to ask, my last question, was about love. If you look at your partner's eyes and you bring yourself into the moment and you just can't, because there's too much in your way and you're looking at so many other things, how do you break through that? What would you tell our audience? How do you break through it to really love the person in front of you?
Sex on a regular basis.
I like that one.
Well, I'll tell you something. In order to have physical intimacy, you've got to drop a whole lot of thinking. And then you know after you get that kind of boneless feeling, then you're not thinking and it's so much easier to experience love.
Seeing each other.
And if you don't let yourself be intimate with your partner, you're generally going in the wrong direction anyway, and then it's really a lot harder to see them.
And if I were to suggest anything, I would suggest people invest in an airplane ticket to New York City when we're doing a weekend workshop.
Meet a lot of people who are transformed, and then you discover it's easy.
Right.
Oh, transformation made easy. There you go.
Great. Great suggestion. Thank you so much.
Thank
You're
you
so
both, really.
Oh, that's great. So, yeah, and they'll be able to find out about the workshops in New York through your website, which is...
Oh,
sure.
Yeah, our website's very, very sophisticated.
We have videos and audios and articles of the month, and they
and
can sign up for our newsletter.
And...
Yep.
Oh, that's great. All right, well, you've been listening to Mark Rawson and Pamela Tor. We had our guests, Aria and Chaya Kane, on with us talking about their beautiful work that they're doing in their newest book that just came out on relationships. So make sure to get out to your local bookstore and purchase that right away. And, of course, check out their website so you can go to New York and take one of those wonderful seminars. And with that said, you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio, and you can find us on the Internet at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And I want to say goodnight to everybody. Thank you for being on the show tonight, and thank you, Pam, and thank you for both of us, or thanks to both of you for being on the radio show with us also.
Thank
you for having us.
All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.